You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
This episode is part of our series on Chicken and Biscuits, a new play by Douglas Lyons.
In this series, we uncover the process behind the play through our central question: how has this play fed your soul?
We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shana Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hello, I'm Douglas Lyons, and I am the playwright behind Chicken and Biscuits.
Ooh, and very special because Douglas is our second guest, or our first guest to appear twice on our podcast. So very, very excited to sit down with Douglas again. I actually haven't seen your face in so long. We've been like messaging and all this stuff, but
I know.
It's also so exciting because this kicks off our mini series on Chicken and Biscuits, which Douglas mentioned he's making his playwright debut on Broadway this season. They begin previews in September, end of September, and opening night is October 10th. So that's really exciting. We're actually planning to go see October 9th, right before they open.
Yes.
So
you got your tickets yet?
We did. We did.
Okay.
We do.
Don't worry.
We read the play last night. It was amazing. I thought like everything like truly jumped off the page. You know, the characters were so well fleshed out. Everything was really nicely balanced. So I'm so excited to like do this mini series here on Page to Stage. So if we could just begin by you, Douglas, explaining, when did the idea first come to you for the story? What was your inspiration for it?
The original concept was going to be a four-person play with Kenny Logan, Benita, and Reginald. And it was going to be, so Reginald is taking over the church, the like family church that Bernard, who was passed, used to be the pastor of. Benita is the matriarch of the family. Kenny is her queer son. And Logan, which Michael Urie plays, is the Jewish boyfriend to Kenny. And the original concept was that unannounced, Benita popped over to their apartment, and she was the guarantor of their apartment and saw all these pictures of this white boy who she thought was just his roommate, but learns that it's his partner. And Logan comes home because he left his wallet at the apartment, and Kenny's trying to defuse them meeting each other because this was not a planned meeting. And Logan's like, is somebody else here? And Kenny's like, absolutely not. And then the toilet flushes. And Logan assumes it's, you know, another man, he's cheating. And so he goes to the bathroom door and curses her out before he's even met her. She swings open the door. And that was the beginning of the play. That was the original concept that I was playing with. And then life got busy. Things were crazy. And I was like, I love that conceit, but how can I expand it? And I buried a family member in like 2017. And because I have a big family on both sides, I've been to a lot of funerals, and it hit me. There's a lot of behavior and a lot of love and reunion and comedy at these Black funerals that would be really parallel for the American stage. And so I took the butt of that idea and expanded it into what Chicken and Biscuits has become.
So when did you first start writing it? You said in 2017, was that, or was it before then?
The first draft of Chicken and Biscuits was sent to Jalen Levingston in August of 2018, because he sent on the first day of rehearsal, he sent me the email.
Oh, that's special.
And I was like, this is the first draft, man. Very nice meeting you. Read it and let's talk. Because we had met at a Britain and the Sting concert, their very first concert. Mm. We just happened to be sitting next to each other. And I was like, hey, man, I'm a playwright, sort of, and an actor, and I'm working on some things, and I'm always looking for Black collaborators. He was like, oh, I'm a actor and writer and director. And I was like, cool. Maybe you want to read this thing I have 30 pages of. And he read it, and then I kept working. And then I sent in the full draft in August 2018. We had a reading that Lilias White starred in November of 2018, and then three readings during 2019, one of which was with the Queen's Theater. And that's where we did the world premiere at the top of the pandemic in 2020, mm-hmm. like February, March, 2020.
Yeah. So as Brian had said, the characters really just, they're so well fleshed out that they just jump off the page. And I took a playwriting class in grad school. I'm not a playwright, but I took that class in grad school, and that was the first time I think where I fully appreciated just how important it is to really work through the characters so that they each have their own voice. And as I was reading it last night, I was hearing their voices in my head. So I'm super excited to actually hear the actors speak the words, because I mean, I have one perspective of how it could be interpreted, but they have a much better and more professional way that it could be interpreted. And so I'm just super excited. So I wanted to just mention that, because I know from my class how difficult it was for me to kind of, assign a different voice or write it out so that the characters all have very unique voices, especially when you have a lot of characters, because for me, at least, it was very easy for one voice to kind of blend with the other, especially if they're family. And so I don't know if that was a process that you went through at all, because is this your first play that you've written? I know you've
my
worked
first
in
play. Okay. Yeah, it's my first full-length play. I think as an actor first, I was a Broadway actor and touring and thing. I learned in studying a lot of television and film, and sort of my style I'm learning is to try to be a bridge between Hollywood and Broadway. So my scripts are intentionally cinematic. And because I feel like I'm not this like highbrow writer, I like writing the human condition. And so my characters are always very accessible by their personalities, because that's just how I know how to write. Like, I don't write really crazy events and really wild things. I write people that wild things happen to, and then we watch them react. And I think that's the magic of human nature. And that's what makes musicals and plays very relatable. Something like Once, which is just like a guy and a girl, right? But there's something beautiful and magical to the simplicity of that. And so that's always my end as a writer, is how can I take the most simplistic people, air quotes, and make them dramatic and make their experience dramatic for the American theater, because that's how you reach the masses. When you come in and you see someone that looks just like you, who's been through what you've been through, and then you relate even more. So
yeah,
that's kind of my style.
I love that you mentioned that you write in a cinematic way, because I totally felt that reading the play. And I'm just wondering, it was just so well-balanced, nuanced, and like heartfelt, especially between the comedy and the seriousness of these situations. How do you find that balance in your script? Like when you're in the development process, is that a lot of between you and your director, you and other creative team members,
producers?
I listen. Right. So on the first day of rehearsal for Broadway, I can't believe I'm saying that for Broadway, we had a table read and we had a discussion about people's reactions and some things that, I'm like, oh, I don't want that to be confusing, or I'm not trying to say that at that moment. And so I listen and I edit, and I always make sure what is landing is what I'm really trying to say. And if it's unclear to the actor, it's going to be unclear to the audience, because they're not going to know how to relay it. So I feel like, especially the theater, the audience is your scene partner. Like, they will teach you so much. That's why I'm excited for previews. And I don't think I know it all, but I know these characters and I know how they might react if you put them in a different situation. So there's a big scene towards the end of the play of healing. And it had a different ending during the world premiere. And I rewrote it like overnight in rehearsal. And now it's sort of broken open the play in a brand new way, because the discoveries and the conversations during this rehearsal period brought us to a new level of possibilities. So that's kind of how I craft. I really lean on the actors and making sure it's clear. And then within the world, you start adding things because, you know, as a comedy, you always want to figure out that rhythm. But that's what the process has been thus far.
Well, it's really interesting because, like, as an actor, you're always seeing the play through the character's eyes. But can you describe what it's like to see it from the playwright's vantage point? Like, versus, like, if you were in Chicken and Biscuits playing one of these characters, you know, versus now you have this whole, you're responsible for this whole vision and storytelling.
Well, I like to feed off of what I see. So in the world premiere production at Queen's Theater, during this sort of chaotic scene, Ebony Marshall Oliver, who plays Beverly, she played it there and she's originating on Broadway. She got up one day and she made this face that was not a line at the time, but her face, the subtext of her face said, "Oh, you do, huh?" And I went, "Okay, I'm going to make that a line." And I gave her a line there for that face that she made. That face and line then got a laugh in the play itself. So I'm always watching to see the world that they're creating with the language I've given them. And from that we build. It's all about clarity. It's like all about clarity. What are you trying to say with what you've written? And is it landing in the way that you intended? Because sometimes you think, you know, at home by yourself, you're writing something, you're like, "Oh, this is going to be a beautiful moment. People are going to be crying." And then everyone's laughing. You're like, "Oh, we didn't want that," you know? So I'm always watching them build the performances and I'm trying to figure out a way to help them serve the best performance that they can find. And if the language is getting in the way or they're stumbling on this one line, how do I make it cleaner? How do I make it easier to say? Because if they feel comfortable, then the story will land even the more.
So you've brought up the actors and the cast. And so I'm curious about the casting process, I guess, first and foremost. If we wanted to jump back to the Queen's Theater world premiere, because you said a few of the actors are also making their Broadway debut with the show. So how was the casting process way back in, what was it, 2019,
I guess? We cast at the end of 2019 for Queen's Theater. And on that specific contract, we had to have 2 non-union actors. So there were 6 equity actors and 2 non-union actors. One of them that was non-union was Anya Mizell, who will be making her Broadway debut now as a union actor in the role of Latrice. And something I think I've learned with Jalen over this casting process is unicorns. We are looking for comedians who are unicorns and special and unique and not stock. You may not see these actors everywhere, but when you see them in this play, you're going to be like, "Whoa, that was funny. That was tight." And so with Queens, we found a really nice dynamic of some people that had done readings before and then some people that were brand new. Alana, who plays Simone, was the only person that had done the majority of the readings in that particular production. And then 3 of the actors from Queens are going to be on stage reprising their roles. And Jennifer Fouché, who was Benita in Queens, is now the standby swing for the 3 women for Broadway, because she's that phenomenal. So Michael Urie had done a fundraiser reading for the Next Wave Initiative that I started in the spring. And Norm Lewis has always been a support and kind person. And it just felt like it was a fit. And then I saw Cleo King when I was in LA on vacation on a TV show on Mike and Molly. And I was like, who is that? And so that's how that happened.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Like,
because that was pretty recently. That was... Right?
Or yeah, that was June. Yeah, we so it all happened very quickly. Like, yeah, the possibility of us going to Broadway was only a thought in like March, April, because things had shifted with American Buffalo. And then like mid-April, I found myself coming to Midtown in my mask, walking around circling in the square to see if it was a possibility that our show would work. Mind you, this is all during the Panorama, all like in secret, you can't say anything. And it's like, "Well, you might go to Broadway. It could go to Broadway." It's like, great, okay.
So they had you looking at the theater before you really knew or not.
Oh yeah. We didn't know because we had to make sure that it was gonna serve the story, because Circleland Square is a very specific space.
I was gonna say, I mean, is it a spoiler to say if you guys are doing it in the round or if you guys are doing Thrust? I can't even remember. You bought the tickets, Mary, so I didn't look at the seating chart.
No, it's like a 3/4 Thrust.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. But you can see that on Ticketmaster, so we're not giving anything away.
Yeah, true.
But we're like walking through to see if we could do it in the space. And then there had to be some union approvals. And the like call for me that I was going to Broadway was very weird, because it was like this step happened, and then this step happened, and then this step happened. And then I was coming home from New Haven, where the play takes place, and Hunter Arnold called me, and he was like, "Hey, you know," because I couldn't hear him. I had my like headphones, and he was like, "What about to do?" And I was like, "What?" He was like, "What?" And I like get home, and I'm on the toilet. He's like, "You're going to be a Broadway playwright," and I was like, "What?" it was like in steps.
Oh my god!
So that was that. But so we knew, I want to say late May, early June, but because I've been so shifted by this pandemic, I like don't believe anything until I'm on set, until I'm in the room, until the check clears. So I was carrying this thing for like 6 or 7 weeks. I wasn't really telling people. I was sort of telling friends, but I always felt like the world could be pulled, you know, from out under me. And then June 24th, they officially announced, and I was like, well, now you're liable. So I guess this is really happening. And right before that, I went to LA on a little vacation, air quotes, which turned into casting, because Erica Hart, our amazing casting director, and Jalen were having initial auditions and callbacks from self-tapes. And then he went to Korea to do Hadestown. I came back from LA. We had final callbacks. He zoomed in from Korea, and yeah, and we cast the show like the week before it was announced.
Crazy.
Were you guys actively pitching this to producers and theaters, like, you know, from Queens Theater to Broadway? How did Hunter Arnold come to you and eventually say, we're going to produce this, we're going to put it up on Broadway, we're getting it in the Circle and the Square?
People are going to love this story. So in 2019 fall, I'm all over the social. I use social media as a way to promote the work. When you're a new writer and a new actor, I feel like it's the best tool to get your work out there, right? So fall of 2019, Hunter followed me on Instagram. And I don't know if it was just the algorithms or how he found me or whatever. And so when I went to look at this new person who's following me, it said Hadestown, the producer. What do you think I did? I slid into his DMs and I said, hey man, how are you? I'm Douglas Lyons. I'm a writer, actor. I have some shows. You should read them. And every 5 weeks thereafter, I would send him a message. Hey, have you read Boat? Have you read Chicken Abyss? Hey, have you read Boat? Have you read Chicken? Right? And then the pandemic hit. And I won't speak for everyone, but I was in my apartment crying and depressed and confused as to what was going on outside. And it was maybe May, June, I got a random message from him that was like three paragraphs long. That was like, I should have read it and I should have looked at this a long time ago, and I would love to figure out a way to work with you. And from that moment, for the next year, we were trying to figure out what projects we could or could not do. We hadn't met yet. We didn't meet until 2021 when we could like come outside and hug each other. But there were conversations about various projects. And then because of his relationship with Once on This Island and Godspell, he was already in with this theater. And there was like a little small possibility that he's like, I think I might be able to get Chicken and Biscuits. And I was honestly not looking for this. It was not like Broadway is the next stop. That was not the intention. We didn't know what we were going to do after Queens. And he talked to the theater owner. More conversations were happening. They read the script. People really liked it. And then we were walking around the theater. And so it was a gradual surprise to get us to where we were. But because I slid in the DMs of a Broadway producer, we're now here.
I mean, I don't want to say like everyone take note, but like take note, but I guess.
What
I
do
mean,
you have to lose? The worst that can happen is you're ignored or they respond and pass. But you lose nothing by saying I'm here and I take up space. So read this thing. And if you don't like it, cool. But at least I put myself forward.
If I remember correctly, back to episode 18 of Page to Stage podcast, our guest Douglas Lyons may have said those same words. Literally, I remember you telling the same gist of what do you do to follow up with somebody to make sure they read your work and get your work out there. So he's made it to Broadway, y'all. Since
oh
that
my episode. Goodness.
Isn't oh it crazy? Goodness. It's so crazy. So wait, so when you were at the Queen's Theater pre Panini, you were you. So Broadway was never for Chicken Abyss was not really like next step or like I mean, I'm sure maybe it was like hopeful wishes, but that was never something you were actively pursuing from Queen's Theater?
No. I mean, our run got interrupted. So I, at the same time, I was doing Five Guys Named Mo at Westchester Broadway as an actor. And so we pushed back opening a week so I could close Five Guys and then be there for opening weekend of Chicken and Biscuits, which was March 6th, 7th and 8th. And that 9th was our like theater industry night. And it was sold out in the box office. But when we showed up, it was like half capacity. It was very, it was like, this is strange. How could we be sold out? But I think people had already started hearing about coronavirus. Mm. And we were supposed to come back to performance that Thursday night, I believe. And that's when Broadway shut down the 12th.
Wild. That's wild.
But no, I we had just gotten one review, you know, word had just started buzzing about, and like our final performance had sold out. So people were like coming back and stuff. And so there was some energy about it, but Broadway, I was like, me, playwright? It's been 3 years since I put, you know, pen to page. Mm. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
Plus a pandemic in the middle of it, right?
But I think a lot of that has to do with, it's a testament to your character and your dedication, but also passion. Like, you were very passionate about the stories, but also the people. Like, you're very invested in the people, your people, the people who are in your circle, who you work with, who are helping you develop your stories. And I think that, you know, it's all like the good graces coming back to you. It's like karma, essentially, good karma.
Well, just to piggyback off that, like, I think it is as important to make the thing as it is to use the thing to bring people forward. Like, what I love about Rent, and I will always go back to it because it was my first show, is that Jonathan Larson created a platform that discovered Adam Pascal, right? And Daphne Rubin Vega and Taye Diggs. We didn't know them before Rent the way that we do now. And so as writers, as, you know, up and coming artists, if I have the ability to pull really talented people forward with my work, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to shoot from the rooftops and shout about them, right? And let everybody know that they're worth being seen. Because if we do that, the theater can become a more equitable and like large reaching space. I feel like it's such a small percentage of people that know what it can do. But if we really use our voices to go, hey, this show is for you. This is cool. You have not seen a character like this before, but it's just like you, come see it. More people will come to the theater. And so that's also part of my movement.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage.
This episode is part one of a two-part episode with today's guest. Check back next week for part two.
To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.